Now, we're going to move on to an area that kind of really matters. Sometimes can sound a bit complicated, but it really, really does matter. And my first guest this morning is involved in the area of genetic research. It's an area with huge potential, not only to influence the outcome of diseases, but to make, obviously, significant profits. It's also not without controversy, and her company has a very ambitious goal, which is to collect genetic samples from nearly 500,000 people here in Ireland. And, I mean, it's a different way of going about it, but reading through the material, you'd think there was a time when TB in Ireland was a death sentence. There was a time when AIDS was a death sentence worldwide. And then there was the hunt and the pursuit and the research and all that goes in to solve it. Well, anyway, Anne Jones is Chief Executive of Genomics, is what it's called, Medicine in Ireland, and she joins me now in studio. Before we get into the... First of all, you're very welcome.
Good
and
morning.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. In
simple English, what are you doing?
So we are, if I could perhaps explain just for your audience what genomics is, and then I'll explain what we're doing with it. So if you think of genomics as being the study of your genome, and your genome is the DNA that makes you up and really what makes you you. Now, if I could give you an analogy of, think of yourself as a jigsaw puzzle, and the DNA are the pieces of the puzzle that make up the jigsaw, because we may need that analogy later. And you have about everybody has 3.2 billion pieces in their jigsaw puzzle. And depending on if every piece is perfect or not, there is always imperfections in the puzzle. And what we are looking at is, we are looking at what are the difference between the puzzles. So what are the difference? Can I find a difference between somebody who may have a disease, like a complex disease, like multiple sclerosis, compared to a healthy person, like spot the difference? And so why are we doing that? We are partnering with pharmaceutical companies to look for new drugs that would be very specific to be able to treat such disorders and such diseases.
Right.
So that's effectively what we're doing.
Effectively what you're doing. Could be very lucrative.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways of looking at it, Marianne. So at the moment, to just any drug development, the average cost is about, it's gone up to 2.7 billion per drug. It used to be about 800 million a number of years ago, and it takes on average about 12 years. And what that's done is it's caused a skyrocketing of drugs, pharma to patients, and also the efficacy of drugs. And what I mean by that is how effective a drug is on a patient is relatively poor. The best drugs on the market are maybe effective 1 in 4 times. Even the top 10, when you get to number 10, it's down to maybe only 20% effective or 10% effective.
Like what, for example?
Like, you know, if you have, I myself have RA, an Enbrel is a drug that you would use in RA, it's probably effective in 1 in 5 patients.
What's it for?
Or for rheumatoid arthritis, for example.
Oh, right, yeah.
Or any of the blockers for cholesterol, in some people they do lower it, in others they don't. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to work with pharma to be more specific about what is your DNA and what part, how will you respond to a particular drug? And can we find treatments for a particular disease that you may have?
Right. But I'll come back to that later about the practical application. You want 400,000 Irish people you're looking for. It's a big ask.
It is a very big ask, absolutely. We're looking at it across 60 complex diseases over a period of, I would say, about a five-year period. Just to go back to the earlier question, just to reiterate, if we can shorten the cycle of developing new drugs, which we believe genomics can, and be more specific with the treatment, then we believe the cost of drugs will go down. So on the one hand, there'll be profit for the company, but hopefully it'll improve healthcare and make it less.
Because it's nearly crippling our own health system at the moment and causing incredible divisiveness, because naturally if there is a drug that you think or we think can sort your mom or your daughter,
absolutely,
or you want it.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. The cost of drugs is, a single injection can cost thousands of of euros. It literally can if it's a biologic, and some insurance companies will let you do it and some insurance companies won't. I have to admit I've actually only been in Ireland, even though I'm Irish, for the last 6 months, so I'm not incredibly familiar with the reimbursement system here. I've been in the US for a number of years. But you're absolutely
no,
right.
No, it's very controversial here, and you hear a lot of complaints on the radio. And one poor man, whom I happen to know, is in charge of making those tough decisions about the value of them. He's a man called Michael Barry. And it's hard, because if the drug companies ask for gazillions and somebody figures it's going to fix their child...
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard, it's very political, and some would say greedy.
I agree. I think, again, you have to take... I don't work for a pharmaceutical company myself, but I will say my goal, and the goal we will be working to, would be to really push that paradigm, because if we can reduce the cost of developing a drug by 10 times, so it's back to only costing maybe now a drug only takes... 200 or 300 million instead of 3 billion. Now there's going to be a huge pressure on pharma companies to say, well, now you don't have to recoup all of that investment. There's a lot less, 10 times less investment. So it should be 10 times less for the drug. That's a real, I think that is the way the future will go in medicine. So it's not just pie in the sky. And I think there will be significant pressure to make that happen. Yeah. And that's what genomics can do.
Yeah. I remember, way back, I said at the outset, when AIDS was a death sentence, and then it all started to develop and things were looking up and things were looking up, but it ended up with dreadful pressure required to get them, to make them available to people who didn't have money, like in Africa. But anyway, Sinn Gael, Ella, I have my doubts about farmers when it comes to money, though I do realise the importance of the work they do. Yeah. Now tell me, because a lot of people would say, look, I'll help if I can. What happens to a volunteer? They walk in your door, essentially, is it?
Yes, well, not quite. So basically, let's take an example. We talked about multiple sclerosis earlier. So let's say I'm doing a study on multiple sclerosis. So the way it works is I will agree with a clinic or a hospital. So for example, we have an overarching agreement how we operate with, for example, the Ireland East Health Group and UCD. We will have a clinic for multiple sclerosis, and we will submit for every clinic that we collect samples, and the samples will be blood samples. We will have an ethics approval, and we will submit to ethics what it is we want to do. So we'll say
you
we want
submit
to do
to ethics where?
So it'll be whatever the local ethics approval is. So basically, we need approval to do the research. Before we ever go to a patient, we have to say, here's what we want to do, here's how we want to do it, here's what's called a very important thing, a patient information leaflet, so that when we approach a patient who will not be very versant in this area, that they will understand why they're going to give us a blood sample and what it is we're going to do with it. In this case, it's going to be for multiple sclerosis research into healthcare. And so then the patient will come to the clinic and a nurse will walk them through the patient information leaflet that's been approved, which can be quite long. And the reason it can be quite long is we have to be compliant as it relates to GDPR.
GDPR, yeah.
And so therefore there's parts which are required in it. We will get advice from patient advocacy groups to make sure that the part which is meaningful to the patient is as simple as possible and also upfront in that leaflet. So they will read it. They will be consenting to submit their blood to extract DNA to be part of what's called a population study. So they will be one of... So in the example of multiple sclerosis, we'd probably want to collect up to 12,000 similar patients. And then we'll look at all their puzzle pieces and we'll compare them to the puzzle pieces of healthy population controls.
So how do you get to the healthy population?
We actually have two clinics both in Dublin at the moment, one in UCD and one at Pier Street. And we do what's called a GenoFit study. So any healthy person can either sign up or walk in from the street and take part in... They do a fitness test and they also submit...
How do you mean a fitness test?
It's called a GenoFit study because and many individuals basically like to give something back to somebody who's giving us some sample, and we feel like giving them a readout of how fit you are. Basically, they'll do a bike, they'll have a DEXA scan measurement. We'll give them basically a readout of how
this
fit they
like
are.
This is like payment.
it's not payment per se, in that we're not giving them any money, but at least it's giving them something that they can take away. Yeah. And
but it's nothing to do with the research.
Nothing to do with the research, yeah. Absolutely nothing.
Okay,
to do with the research.
So somebody comes in across your threshold,
yeah.
And what happens?
They come in, they'll give a... First of all, they'll sit down, they'll go through the patient information leaflet.
Yeah.
They'll then give us their consent. They have to sign, they'll go through the consent form.
Yeah.
And they'll fill out what's called a lifestyle questionnaire.
What does that mean?
That means it's a questionnaire which goes through the lifestyle. Do you smoke? Do you run? Do you swim? How do you sleep well? Do you drink alcohol? Because that information is helpful in order to combine it with the genetic data so we understand somebody's lifestyle, because this is a complex area.
Right.
So they'll fill in a lifestyle questionnaire and they'll give a blood sample, and that's they'll consent. That's what they will do. So basically, from a patient perspective, that's as much as they will do. The research nurse who's participated, who's walked the patient through it, and normally the procedure can take anything from an hour. It can take, because it often takes Mariana a good 20 to 30 minutes to talk somebody through the information leaflet,
right,
for example.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that, and then they have to fill in the lifestyle questionnaire, so
all
they
right.
can't be rushing it.
Yeah.
And we'll often explain it to them the 1 week, and they'll come and do it perhaps the next time they're in clinic. So it's usually it's going to be aligned with whenever they're in clinic for whatever their illness is. So the research nurse, after the patient has now gone away,
yeah.
the research nurse will actually access the medical records so that we understand how that particular person...
Oh, medical presents. Records as well?
Yes, they are then uploaded into a database anonymously. So that's an important point. So at the point of the clinic, so if you're my clinician, if
yeah.
I'm the patient and you're the clinician, you know that I'm Anne, but what you'll do is you'll anonymize me for when it comes to GMI. So basically, the sample that comes into GMI and all of the information that comes into GMI is anonymized, or pseudonymized, as we call it. What that means is it's encrypted. So
like patient 123?
Exactly. So now it's no longer Anne Jones. I've now become patient 123. And when it comes into, the sample then comes into GMI, into my facility, comes in as patient 123, so it's anonymous.
But say, for example, patient 123, and you're interested in multiple sclerosis,
mm-hmm.
but it is noticed within the jigsaw puzzle, as you say,
mm-hmm.
that there's an indication of something else. Do you tell 123 that?
That's a really good question. So I need to just explain to you what we see before I can answer.
Okay.
So let me just explain to you what we see. So we'll stick with the jigsaw puzzle. So we've got a 3.2 billion piece puzzle.
Yeah.
So even if I simplify it and say I have a 1,000-piece puzzle, so what I'm doing is I'm making all the pieces of the puzzle. So I've made all the pieces of the puzzle. And now, if you think about it, when you start making a puzzle, you empty the box, the pieces onto the table.
Mm.
And let's say the puzzle is of a landscape and it's got trees and flowers and rocks. But when I empty the puzzle on the table, you can't see the trees or the flowers or the rocks. All you can see are puzzle pieces.
Mm.
So I would need to make, to go to another stage, I'd have to turn all the pieces the right way around or sort them out into colors and then make a tree or a rock.
Right, yeah.
It's that tree or that rock or the pebble that would be the indication. And I guess what I'm saying, Marianne, is today in GMI we do research. So what we're doing is you're just looking at the puzzle. We're just establishing the puzzle pieces. We don't make the trees or the rocks or the pebbles
right.
yet. We could. We don't. We don't have consent from the patient to either. So today, I would say within the puzzle pieces, the information is there, but you have to do something further in order to find the information. You have to make the puzzle. So
right.
it's not like it's... I don't get a readout that says patient 123 has these indications.
But might be, you know, expect to get breast cancer or something like that.
I would have to make the tree in order to find that out.
And who does make the tree?
Nobody does today, but we could. I mean, and it is something I get asked a lot. So just to tell you what would need to happen in order to tell you.
Yeah.
So what would need to happen is I would have to resubmit my approvals to... Now I'd change the patient consent form so that patient 123 positively says, I'm going to look for, we talked about breast cancer, so I'm going
yes.
to say, I'm going to when I make your puzzle or when I create the pieces, I'm also going to look for the breast cancer gene mutation, and maybe I'll choose three or four more. And you as a patient will tick the box and say, I want you to tell me if you find something.
Yeah.
So it has to be opt-in. So the patient needs to tell us that they would want to know. So from my process, I would have to change my consent form, go through ethics approval, and then I would have to make the tree. I'd have to do a little bit of more work in my facility. Then I would have to return that find if I found something. So let's stick with our example. You're a multiple sclerosis patient.
Yeah.
I found you've got a breast cancer mutation. I would have to go back to the multiple sclerosis specialist because I don't know who the patient is. And I would say, patient 123 has a breast cancer indication, and that person said that they wanted to know. So the point I'm making, when you get to the multiple sclerosis clinician, they don't particularly want to inform their patient about a breast cancer indication because they don't know anything about breast cancer because they're a multiple sclerosis. So,
thinking of the poor patient that, first of all, has multiple sclerosis. And then if there's something that indicates that there could be an indicator of breast cancer, they would want to know.
Many would, some would not. So again, it has to be consented.
Yeah.
And in Ireland, we have to create an infrastructure for return. They're called incidental findings, by the way. So we have to create an infrastructure to return those to the patient.
Right.
So in England, and we have there's a similar publicly funded initiative in England.
It comes under the.
It's funded by the NHS.
NHS.
It's a private company called Genomics England, but fully publicly funded. So it's in effect public.
So the beneficiary will not necessarily be a pharma, or will it in Britain?
In Britain. If I could just finish on the incidental findings, I also want to point out in Britain they do ask patients to consent for just 8 indications. They are struggling a little bit in how to return them to the patient. So we're working with Genomics England to get their. What I'm saying is, I agree with you. I would like to at least have a discussion how to make it happen, but it has to be a cross-sectoral discussion. It's not just my decision. It is with the clinicians, the patient advocacy groups, the Department of Health, the HSE, etc. So we want to talk about that. In the UK, the goal of Genomics England is very much to integrate into the healthcare system.
Yeah.
So,
like in a perfect world, mm-hmm. if one is doing research such as you describe, one would love to have that for the public good, for society, available to academics, available to medical people, scientists, the whole lot. Whereas I get the impression that this will be available to the company to sell to farmers and give farmers the opportunity to develop, as opposed to making it public, freely available for the common good.
Yeah, I think with me, so first of all, I actually agree with it, and I don't disagree at all, for example, with the Irish Times article that was out this week in terms of the sentiment. And also, that is the direction that we plan to go in, and let me explain how. What we're doing is incredibly expensive. So to create the database will cost about 600 to 800 million euros, we'll say. And so in order to fund it, there needs to be some period of time, probably a couple of years, maybe 3, maybe a little longer, of exclusivity for the farmer to do some of their work.
Will you sell to a number of farmers?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, different diseases will be sold. We don't sell the data, by the way. That the patient always owns their data. We create a database and we sell access to that database.
That's semantics, isn't it?
It's not. Well, in my mind, it's not, because it's such a specific field. But, that yes or no. I mean, the point is the patient always has the right to have their data back. But to go back to your point, I do want to make it clear that there's two things we do. We do return the data to the clinicians for their own research if they want it. So that there are research clinicians that we return the data to. And then long term, we also do want to integrate into the Irish healthcare system. And in order to do that, we absolutely have to open up the database. So we really do plan to have a data access program similar to the UK. There just has to be a time delay, because the cost we have to get a return on as a reimbursement cost.
The two docs that wrote Raising Issues, they're both very distinguished in their field, aren't they?
Oral and David, yes.
Yes. Yep. Describe to people who they are?
So Orla Hardiman is a neurologist, as I believe she focuses on ALS, and she's in Trinity. I actually don't know David McConnell, but I believe he's in Trinity as well.
Yeah,
I only don't know him because I've not been back in the country that long, I will submit, rather than the fact that he's not because he's not famous, but
yeah,
Orla
well,
and
he
I.
Is. Yeah, they both are.
Absolutely.
Now, a caller was on to say, Marion, under no circumstances should people voluntarily provide any company with their DNA, the potential to sell your data to insurance companies exist, and if they have it, you will not get the life insurance policies we currently have at the rates we currently have. That's a terribly valid point that came in from Brian.
Well, I would have to say there's two things. First of all, we don't have the ethics approval to ever sell anything to an insurance company. And secondly, in Ireland, we're lucky enough that we are covered by a 2005 Disability Act, which precludes insurance companies from using genomic data to make any decisions in insurance. So Ireland actually has a level
but
of security.
Do you think our listeners out there trust that? Do I think I trust that?
Well,
I mean,
I trust that I will not. I certainly trust the part that I will never sell anything to an insurance company. And I also know the fact that if we don't do research in genomics, we will never be able to move forward healthcare at the rate that is absolutely essential for all of us. And the difference that we can make with healthcare is just phenomenal. We have, you know, childhood cancer, we cure it 90% of the time, but 60 to 80% of those children have toxic side effects. And we're partnering with Professor Owen Smith and Walter Koch in UCD to get very specific about looking at toxic side effects through genomics. And, doing things like that so that a child is treated with the right drug very specifically. And also adults, but just children are more vulnerable because they're growing, and that's why the drugs that they're treated with tend to be very damaging. So that whole area, I guess, I feel very passionate about it. And this is the way things are going. In Ireland, we can get ahead of the game. We're partnering with England in terms of how we do things, and I believe this is the way forward.
Okay. That was your PhD, wasn't it?
I did do cancer research in my PhD, yes.
Yeah.
I worked in the Cancer Research UK.
Okay. Now, we approached our own department to find out, because, again, there was an article in the paper to say, I think it was the Secretary General, was not one bit happy with what was going on. He visited, etc., etc. So we got on to them and we got a very, very, very long reply, but it was a considered reply. And they said the deliberation, and I couldn't possibly read it all out, DNA analysis for the purpose of genetic susceptibility to disease, and they go into what all that is, which you've described.
Yeah.
This deliberation and dialogue amongst politicians, government officials, healthcare staff and the public and others includes the need to better understand the value proposition for healthcare systems. I didn't write this, by the way, and neither did anybody on the programme. But they say they're very much in favour of it, but they have no strategy. There is no strategy in Ireland.
Yeah.
And then they go on to say that they would be in favour of it because countries like England, Finland, Denmark, Estonia, Italy and Canada have all done this. Ireland, they say, has a strong tradition of investing in genetic and genomic research, and they're well placed to utilise genomic data. And the minister has called on the need to develop a comprehensive strategy to respond to the opportunities and challenges to set out the conditions, promoting research. But there is no strategy.
There is no strong strategy today.
There is no strategy that I can see. As you go down through this, they talk about...
I fully agree there needs to be one, but I am very open and happy to work with the department and with whomever to be part of that. But we are not the strategy. So to be clear, I really want to work with the cross-sectorally to be a part of that strategy. Both myself and the Department of Health are in contact with Genomics England, who are visiting us in the coming months. So together we can talk about how we can integrate into healthcare for the future. So I would say whilst there isn't one today, there are certainly plenty of discussions right now to develop a strategy. There was a paper written, again, by Professor Owen Smith in 2015 outlining what the strategy should be. We just need to implement it, quite honestly.
Yeah. And the HSE is actively involved in learning. Well, it's always good to learn from other countries who have developed a national genomics initiative.
Yeah.
Highlighted the situation where Ireland currently doesn't have a strategy. His commitment, this is the Minister, to developing a national strategy. Noted the agreement on a genomic strategy for Ireland will require discussions, debates, da-da-da-da-da. And the third one, anyway, I think we're the same in reproductive medicine. We never got ahead of the posse, so to speak. Now, there was fear struck in the land when the implications of the Chinese being involved in this were in, because the Chinese wouldn't have the finest record in ethical use of people's private information.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I will say, so we do have a partial Chinese ownership by the parent company of GMI, which is WuXi NextCode. It's a minority shareholding. But I think that said, and I understand, by the way, I understand people's perspective in terms of being nervous. But what you've got to understand is that we have to be GDPR compliant, which means that all data generated is is generated in Ireland and it stays in Ireland. It has to stay in Europe. It actually stays in Ireland.
But there's no really such thing or guarantee of anything staying in Ireland or in China or in Timbuktu now that people can hack into this and hack into that. Like, it's not guaranteed.
Nothing can be 100% guaranteed.
No.
I agree. But the data is as encrypted as it possibly can be. And it's also anonymized. So even if you were to break in, first of all, you'd have to break in to our system. Then you would have to decrypt it. And then even then, you couldn't identify it because it's been pseudonymized anyways. So you would have to find a clinic, and so it's not. It would be very challenging.
Yeah, I know that. But you know, we had a youngster who got into the American military system. I mean, very bright people can do this.
I think it's again. I would say that we have as encrypted as one can get, but even if you get into the system, you won't be able, there are no personal identifiers in the database because we don't have any personal identifiers.
Right.
So that is an important point. So from a patient perspective, they have been encrypted at the point of the clinic,
right.
So that our database doesn't have any personal identifiers.
So you work for the multinational. Who do you answer to?
Yeah, I work for, as well, GMI is wholly owned by WuXi NextCode, so therefore I report.
WuXi NextCode.
Yeah.
It's wholly owned. Mm-hmm. I thought it was only a minority holding.
Well, WuXi NextCode, the headquarters, despite the sound of the name, which I think is perhaps an off-putting, our headquarters are in Boston, Massachusetts.
Right.
And it's got investors in the US, Iceland, Ireland, Singapore, Hong Kong, and a small portion in China.
But it's a Chinese name, because
it does have a Chinese name. You know,
yeah.
It does. Yes.
And to whom do you answer?
I answer to the CEO of WuXi NextCode, who's Rob Brainin. He's an American who's in Boston.
Who's in Boston?
Yeah.
You were working in this field in Boston for quite a
while. I was working in the life sciences field. This is actually the first time I've always worked in corporate life sciences. I've never worked for a private company, and I've actually not ever worked in Ireland. It's my first time.
Is it?
Working in Ireland.
Is
yeah.
it?
So, yeah.
When did you leave?
I left when I did my degree in 1991. So, and I came back 6 months ago, and I feel very passionately about doing something positive in research in Ireland. And I do think, just in terms of a plug, I think it's a way that we can bring a lot more research into Ireland, and there's related spaces. So there is a lot of positive, you know, job opportunities and opportunities to repatriate people like myself, to do some good and hopefully to push to really get a genomic strategy and make better healthcare in Ireland.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me go back to our listeners. Marion, surely genetic and drug research should be a United Nations responsibility to which all countries contribute according to their means and all peoples benefit regardless of their poverty. That's an interesting concept. Take it out of the profit-making multinational corporations. And that comes from Rhoda. And I mean, I can see the point, because I know, just to go back to AIDS, they wouldn't change the format for the kids because, at that stage, matters had progressed and no children in the United States were born positive, but they were being born by the gazillion black, little black babies.
There's a lot of things that weren't done well with AIDS,
yeah,
in my view.
Yeah, it was a terrible thing. But unfortunately, without the profit motive, the farmers aren't going to do the research, are they?
No.
Like, is that possible that it could all be done and wholly owned publicly?
May I say, the United Nations approach is still something that there is a win-win here. So there is an opportunity. This is, we're in for the long term here, but we're talking about 10, 15, 20 years. There is a way to win-win. We can get pharma to do a lot of the funding up front, give them a year or two, and then we share data together moving down. We have to share data, by the way, in order to have integrated into healthcare.
Yeah.
I'm already talking with Genomics England in terms of what we will do in the future. How can we work together? How can we partner? But you're absolutely right. And that's, by the way, what pharma companies do too. They'll work with me, but they'll also work with what's called FinnGen, which is the Finnish outfit, Genomics England, who do actually work, by the way, with pharma companies as well.
So, right.
So, but the United Nations comment, couldn't agree more. That's the way we have to go moving forward.
Okay, that's and that came from Rhoda. Next one. My good friend has MS, so it's really exciting to hear this kind of research finally taking place in Ireland. About time. The benefits to patients will be enormous.
And that's usually the sentiment of the patients as well. That's why they do it.
Ask Anne from Genomics Medicine Ireland, who owns, well, we've done that,
yeah,
Genomic Medicine Ireland. It's the Chinese pharmaceutical company WuXi. So so where's the decision making? The decision is at the board level.
Yeah,
happens in Boston?
We do actually. We actually operate GMI independently here in Ireland, and we have our own board in Ireland. So, yes, I mean, as I explained transparently, I report up into WuXi, but we do operate independently. We feel like it's important to make our decisions independently here.
Okay, moving on. GMI is a for-profit company. Ordinary people give their DNA for free, but they and society as a whole get nothing in return, says Jim in Dublin. And the answer to that is, Anne has already said, that is true. It is a for-profit company, but as the previous caller said, their friend with MS figures that they will benefit. And I think that's the way it works on all of these volunteer programmes for medical research. You probably won't get it immediately should you need it, but it will add to
Absolutely.
The development of medicine down the road.
I would like to think, actually, Marianne, that many of the patients that we work with, because I've mentioned MS, but we do asthma, diabetes. These are chronic diseases, or IBD, but they're not necessarily life-threatening diseases. So there is certainly, there's a real, and also MS, by the way, there's a huge spectrum of MS.
Of course, yeah.
So there is, whilst we cannot guarantee that it will have positive effect for each patient, there's a real possibility that it will. And that's what everybody, you know, and we want, and for the future and for our future healthcare, that's what it's all about.
Okay. Hi, Marion. Who are the ethics committee your guest has referred to a few times during this interview? It's worth putting that again because it varies, doesn't it?
It does vary. We don't have an ethics, we don't have a single ethics committee in Ireland. So each, usually regionally, there's an ethics committee for each region. So, and they meet, like there'll be one in Cork that is probably sitting in UCC. There'll be several in Dublin. There'll be ones within particular hospitals will have their own ethics committee. So whatever the ethics committee is for the hospital that we're working with,
right,
is where the ethics of submission will go.
Would it not be more appropriate for the government to declare the ethics?
Actually, the government are moving forward. As far as I understand, to the best of my knowledge, there will be centralised ethics in Ireland in the not-too-distant future.
Right. Very tricky area. It's not who she sells data to, but who they sell the data onto.
Yeah, another important point is that my best analogy is anybody we work with as a pharma partner, they have access to read our data and look at it and analyze it, but they don't have access to download it. So it's like a reading library, not a lending library, is my best analogy. So they can't take out the data out of the database and sell it on. First of all, they legally are signing something to say that they won't. So again, I would like to think that ourselves and people we work with are have strong ethics from the pure sense of the word. But even if they didn't, it would be pretty much impossible because they only get a limited time-bound access to encrypted data, which is just decrypted as they look at it automatically.
Okay, last one. Without this kind of research, I would not be able to get out of bed in the morning. Embrel and Humira, or Humeria, I'm not quite...
Humira, yeah.
Which?
Humira.
Humira have been a godsend. And when you're in such pain, you would sell your soul to the devil. Well, you don't have to, patient, but I'm glad that you can get out of bed. Listen, it's been very nice meeting you, and you obviously work in a very interesting field. But I suppose you will be conscious that people will be a little worried, a little iffy, but you're trying to reassure them.
We'll continue to, I mean, for me, it's about building trust in the community, continuing to give back through like the Children's Cancer Program, etc., and then working forward and then educating as well. So we're working on education so people begin to understand what we're doing, because the better you understand and the more we build trust.
Right.
I don't expect it to happen overnight, Marianne, but over time.
Okay, and I gather you're meeting up with Ola Hardiman anyway.
I hope so in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very, very much indeed. That was Dr. Anne Jones, Genomic Medicine Ireland. Thank you very much indeed. We'll take a break.
Podcast The Marian Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.